Thank you, Garth. Thanks, everybody. Yeah, this is the last week as we have been in a series called Think Orange. And this series is really all about our strategy for reaching the next generation. As a church community, we really just wanted to help you understand how important this is. And it's a part of our value system as a church, is to really incorporate a whole age group, whole generational approach to our faith and ministry, and we're all in this together. And so as a church, we really believe in equipping the family to help raise these kids in the ways of God, and we really are recruiting everyone's help in that process. And so that's really what Think Orange is about. You'll see from the graphic there is the family, which is represented by the color red, and it's representative of love and the heart of the matter. And then there's the church, and the church is bright. It's yellow. It's the light. We're to shine the light of Jesus. And when we blend these two things together, we can make a big impact in the next generation. And that is really what this is about. So we've covered a number of our different family values and just things that we want to emphasize and focus on and teach to you as the family and as parents and as those who are find themselves maybe outside of that nuclear family concept, but you have a role to play as well. And today, I want to talk about an important principle that we would just describe as widen the circle, widen the circle. And widen the circle is this: providing and pursuing strategic relationships for the next generation. Corbin and I, we have this theory, and we've talked about it actually a number of times. It's come up in our conversation. It's called the white lab coat theory. And Corbin will even nod his head and say, I know that theory. And that theory is this: that you can say just about anything as convincingly and as certain as the day is long, and your kids will just not hear it if it comes from you. Especially, and Corbett and I constantly commiserate with each other because we have children who are in junior high and high school, and they just reach that age when your voice is no longer the most important voice or the voice that is authoritative in their life. They need somebody else to say it. And so the white lab coat theory is that when you tell your kids, hey, you should eat right and you should exercise and you should do all these things, it might mean one thing to them coming from you, and then when you go take them to the doctor and the doctor has the white coat on and says, hey, you need to eat right and you need to exercise and all these things, they might hear it very differently, right? They might hear it and say, oh, I actually need to do these things, right? This is actually important. It's not coming from my parents or the dentist who says, hey, we're going to have to do two root canals on you this week, and so maybe you should brush your teeth. I've been saying that all along as their dad. And yet they don't hear what I say. They hear what the person in the white lab coat says. I had this experience. Those of you who know, I train my kids in basketball. It's mandatory in our family. Mandatory hard labor training in basketball. And I have just trained and trained and trained and trained them. And it gets to the point where some of the kids who are older in the family, well, even the youngest one, they don't want to listen to what I say about things anymore. In fact, we get into all sorts of arguments about how you should shoot or how you should do this move or that move. And so I just throw my hands up in the air. I'm like, why am I even talking right now? It just is not getting through. And I've learned strategically to bring in other coaches. And so some of you know Bim, who plays on the worship team. He also played college basketball at Seattle U. And so I get Bim, all right? And Bim is an excellent basketball player. He played college basketball. He's got cred, right? He's the white lab coat. And he comes in and he tells my kids, okay, this is how you ought to do it. This is how you ought to shoot. This is how you ought to train. And instantly, they're just glued to this guy. Like, he knows everything about basketball. Dad knows nothing, apparently. He knows everything. I'm like, I said that. You know, I told you that. He's like, no, you didn't. You know, Bim said that. And so, and it's just the way that it works. They have more authority. It's amazing. And so, you know, parenting, especially, and for those of you who have young kids and they're getting older, you need to know this. It gets more and more difficult, right, to get through. It gets more and more difficult. You become the talking head, right? You become the person who just is trying and trying and trying, but they just aren't listening to you like they used to. You used to be everything to them. you used to be able to, you know, describe the ways of the world, and you were the source of wisdom, and you were the authority, and you were the one that they wanted to be like. And then as you, as they get older, well, as you get older too, right, all of a sudden that starts to wear thin, and it's just not so much true anymore. And so parenting can be really intimidating in that way, because all of a sudden, you know, you lose some of that authority, you lose some of that influence over your kids, and you're thinking to yourself, well, are they ready? Are they ready to kind of take on this independence and make their own decisions and listen to other voices in their life? And, well, yeah, you better make sure that they're ready for that. That's the intimidating part, and that's the hard part about it. But regardless of your stage in parenting, and here's the promise, a time will come when your children will need another adult to speak into their life and to be an influence over their life. And that is really the heart of what this idea is about, that we are to widen the circle. We are to pursue those strategic relationships. And as parents, we need to be intentional about this process of seeking those strategic relationships that will speak life into our kids and that will echo some of these things that we are saying as parents to them all the time. And so that's what we mean by widen the circle. I want to take you to the passage that we have built this entire sermon series on, the foundation for what it really means as a community to disciple the next generation and to really impart the things of the faith onto their hearts and lives. And we have been going over this verse every single week through this series. So Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. This is Moses. He's speaking to the entire nation of Israel. It's near the end of his life. This is his last, hey, this is what is most important, his last thrust. And he says this, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. And that's his thrust. That's what he wants them to remember. But notice, and maybe we could have started with this, but I wanted to save this one for last. But notice how he begins. Hear, O Israel. It's not, hey, parents, I have something for you. It's not just directed at families. This is the entire community that is his audience who is standing before him as he speaks these words. And so he is entrusting the next generation to everyone who is present, the entire community of Israel, the entire nation of Israel. It's the leaders of the nation of Israel. It's the relatives who are in the crowd, right? It's the older siblings. It's the aunts. It's the uncles. It's the cousins. It's the grandparents, right? All these people are being addressed here, and he is saying, hey, this is on you. This is your responsibility. There was, I think, in many ways, probably a messy family context. In what you would see in ancient Israel, you would probably have all sorts of kids being raised by maybe siblings, or raised by grandparents, or raised by aunts and uncles. I mean, there was a ton of death in childbirth. There was death in war. There was death in pestilence. There was death in plague, right? There was all sorts of things that would transpire in the lives of family members. And so the responsibility for raising this generation oftentimes went to the entire community. Yes, he's speaking to the parents, but he's speaking to everybody else as well. It's everyone who is involved in this process. And so this is an enormous task, right? Leading the next generation to follow the ways of God and to live in faithfulness to God. And so Moses had designed this, and I believe in a very intentional way, wanted to relay this to the people, that our strategy is going to be a multi-generational one. You notice in the verse before this passage that we have looked at, the Shema, which is a very important passage in the Old Testament, but right before that, in Deuteronomy 6, verse 2, he says this. He says, this is so that your children and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live. And so right there, he's speaking to the generations who are involved in that process. Let me give a shout out for a moment to all of the grandmas and the grandpas in this room. Raise your hand if you're a grandma or a grandpa. One of the things I love about Westside Church is how multi-generational it is. And a lot of that comes from the fact that, of course, Richard and Valerie are here and started our church, and are present, and I've taken over the church, and I've got young family, and so we really are representative of a large swath, I guess you could say, of people. But man, I am so grateful for the grandmas and the grandpas in our kids' lives. They speak value to them. They echo the voice of parents. They are our reinforcements, right? They are the ones that come alongside us and help us when we're over our heads and when we've had it up to here with this whole parenting thing. Grandmas and grandpas come in to our aid, and so grateful for them. And aunts and uncles and cousins and siblings and friends and everybody who's involved in this whole process. And so the idea behind what Moses is saying is simply what we have suggested to you, that we are to widen the circle, that we are to pursue these strategic relationships for our sons and for our daughters. And we want to invite these other voices into their lives, invite these voices into their lives to broaden the range of influence that is being spoke over them. We want to speak life into them. We want others to speak life into them. So we are going to invite other leaders into their lives and broaden this range of influence for them. In a culture where community is not automatic, I think there are limited role models. And so we have to really pursue this in a strategic and intentional way. Parents have to become intentional about finding other people to speak into the lives of their kids. And that's something that I believe that is a thrust of importance for being involved in a church community. Because in a church community, you have people with like-minded values, people who are echoing your voice at home. And you can find, oftentimes, mentors and leaders and people to speak into the lives of your kids. Here is the truth. The kids will find another adult's voice of validation in their life, whether you strategically place it there or not. And so you might as well be strategic about it. You might as well help introduce them to the right kind of people, help form those relationships in a strategic way, rather than just letting them happen by default. You never know what kind of role models might come along, for good or not for good. And so we want to surround them with the right kind of role models. There's a piece of research that might interest some of you as parents, and it has to do with kids and teenagers in particular who graduate from high school, and there's that period of time where they graduate from high school and they go into college and go on with the rest of their lives, where so many kids are unchurched from that high school phase till they have kids of their own. So many of them leave the church during that period of their lives, and I think we could all agree it's a very crucial period in their lives where they're making a lot of decisions and they're forming who they are going to be. And research suggests that by a margin of 46% compared to 28%, kids who have strategic influences, have strategic relationships or role models of people who have spoken into their lives, 46% of them will not fall sway to that statistic of not attending church through that period of time, compared to only 26% of them who will fall away from church if they don't have those strategic influences in their life. And so there's a much greater chance that your kids will go on to place a priority on church through that difficult season of teenage years, you know, all the way up till they're having their own kids, if they have these voices in their life, if they have these mentors and these spiritual guidance counselors who are speaking into their lives on a weekly, monthly basis. I was thinking about the Romans chapter 12 passage, where the Apostle Paul talks about the body. He talks about the church as a body, and that we are all representative of different parts of the body, and that when we work together, something magical happens. Something amazing happens. He says this, "For just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others." Right, this gives us a sense of our responsibility towards one another, and maybe in this context we could even say towards the family, right? To lend support, to give our support, to be available to speak into the lives of kids, even if they are not your own. You know, I was reflecting on this weekend. My wife had been informed that there was a girl who is a manager on her basketball team who had been being cyber-bullied, right? And there was some things going around on social media, and there was a concern, and Deborah caught wind of this. She saw some of this, and she recognized right away this was a serious situation and something needed to be done. And I was so filled with emotion over my wife's passion for this girl and her willingness to say, this is not my daughter, but I'm going to treat her as though she were my daughter, and I'm going to come to her aid and rescue her in this situation. And so my wife made a number of different calls. She just went full out in protection of this girl and ensured that she was protected in the midst of this terrible stuff that was being said about her. And man, I got emotional over the situation as she was making these calls. It was bringing tears to my eyes just seeing how passionate she was about the life of this young girl. And I was just realizing, man, it's not just our kids. You know, even some of you who are parents, you've got an investment in your own kids, but I'm telling you, there's a lot of kids around here. There's a lot that this next generation, I mean, they're all over the place, right? And we've got this responsibility to really protect them and preserve them and encourage them and build them up in their faith, whether they're our own or not. It's something that God has really entrusted us with. We are a body. We are together in this. We are working together to ensure that everyone comes along with the process, that everyone makes it. This is a community. This is a family. This is one body. One of the ways that this works at Westside is through our small group system. And I know a number of you kind of understand the concept of small groups, or we call them community groups here at the church for adults. But we really have built that into our entire ministry model from adults on down to elementary age kids. And the way the small groups work is for our elementary kids, right now, in fact, they're probably in small group time. So they'll have a different worship time. They'll have a teaching time where they're learning the lesson, they'll have Bible story time. And then they'll break off into small groups and there's a discussion. And every single one of those small groups has a small group leader. And so just to give you an example, my kids who came up through our kids' church, right now Judah is my youngest, and he's still down there. He's in fourth grade. Got to keep that in straight. So he's in fourth grade, and he has Kyle Brown right now, who is Judah's small group leader. And so Kyle is one of these influences in the life of my son Judah. He speaks life to him. He echoes some of these values that Deborah and I are trying to train him at home. And if I needed support, Kyle would be there. If I needed him to talk to Judah about something, I could give him a phone call and say, Kyle, can you take him out this week because he's dealing with this or he's dealing with that. And I want you to know, if you have an elementary age kid on up to junior high and high school, we have an advocate there for you. We have somebody that is speaking into their life, one of their small group leaders. To give you an understanding of how this works as they move through junior high and high school, in junior high, every junior high student has a small group leader. And so my daughter Gwyneth and my daughter Addie are both in junior high. Gwyneth meets in a small group with Chelsea Doyle and a number of her friends. And Chelsea is just a bundle of energy and a ton of fun, and it's perfect for Gwyneth. And then Kim Cavanaugh, who actually emailed us this week and was like, hey, I'm getting all the girls together this morning before church. They met for coffee, and Kim was pouring into their lives because she knew she had something going on later this afternoon. And so she's like, I don't want to miss this time. And she made sure that they had that appointment together, they could connect. They do so on a biweekly basis. These community group leaders, these small group leaders, are investing into the lives of our kids. Jason Harwood is the small group leader for my son Josiah. And when Jason first took on this role, Josiah was getting all these texts, and he's like, why is this guy Jason after me? Like, he wants to go to coffee with me, he wants to invest in my life. Like, This is weird. Like, who is this guy? And I'm like, no, this is strategic. This is Dad saying, Jason, you're the white lab coat, all right? You talk to Josiah. You get all the conversations about girls, right? You get to take all that, Jason. No way. But it's so great. I mean, just to have these people who are echoing the things that Deborah and I are speaking into their lives on a daily basis, they're they're reinforcing that. And even now, and I wanted this to be a secret, but Josiah's right here. But Jason's reinforcing this, right? It's a strategy. We're strategically going to mold him into a man of God, right, Josiah? Yeah. Why do I always have to be a sermon illustration? That's what he's thinking right now. Beginning right around junior high, and I talked about this a little bit earlier, but there is a shift. A shift in the lives of our kids. They shift from viewing you as the authority, viewing you as the one who has all the right answers, and they begin to find the influence of others as a more prominent, and the authority of others, especially in high school, becomes their peers. This happens in varying degrees, you know, for sure. But kids definitely, they tend to start exploring, who am I in the eyes of somebody else besides my parents? Because my parents have to love me. Right? It's their duty, right? God has given them me, and it's their duty to love me. So who am I in the eyes of this person or that person? And they start finding their place in this world and understand their value through the eyes of these other people in their lives. And I know this was true of me as well. For me, as I was turning 16, I had had a Jesus moment. I had experienced Jesus in this powerful way at a youth camp during a worship time. And it was a powerful moment for me where I just recognized, wow, I've got to start following Jesus. I wasn't at that time for a couple of years. I was really kind of struggling through junior high and early high school and just didn't have my bearings when it came to my faith. And what was happening at home is my parents were exceptional through the early years of my life. They were present. They were there. My dad was just a constant presence in my life. My mom was a constant presence in my life and really built a foundation for me. But as I got older into my teen years, my parents were both working. And so we would come home, and there just wasn't a whole lot of time for them. And honestly, and we've talked about this as a family, but honestly, there was kind of a void there in the household. And it's also a natural time where I was seeking independence. I was seeking to get these other influences in my life and understand, you know, where I stood with the world. And so I'd had this experience with Jesus, this encounter with Jesus at this camp, and I came home and I asked my parents, can I move to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, which is where this church was, this camp experience that I'd had. And I wanted to live with my brother-in-law and my sister, who were over there in Idaho. And I knew I needed to change things in my life. And I was so committed to do so. I was going to leave my friendships and my high school and all those things and move to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho and get things right with God. And amazingly, my parents agreed to that. Now, my oldest son, Josiah, is 15. He's going on 16. I can't imagine him making a decision like this. And yet somehow my parents agreed to allow me to go to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And when I look back on that, I always think to myself, you know, what God was doing is he was placing other godly men and women in my life to back up the things that my parents had said all those years ago. And I was thinking about three people in particular. First of all, my brother-in-law, Tom. He became a mentor to me. All the things that my dad had said and done might have gone in one ear and out the other, but Tom was getting through, right? Tom was the one who was mentoring me in life. He taught me how to play guitar and lead worship, something I enjoy so much. And he had this love for Jesus that was infectious. And it really helped pull me back into the faith. And then there was Tom's dad, Tim, who was, of course, my brother-in-law's dad. And Tim, I lived with him for about 6 months. And I had my first job with Tim in the house. And Tim was teaching me about responsibility. And he was the one who was really like, man, you were getting up early. You're going after it. He was an encourager. And he was like, I'm so proud of you, you know, for doing that. And hearing that from Tim, you know, again, somebody other than my father, it was just so reinforcing. It helped ground me in so many ways. I learned the ethic of hard work through his encouragement and his, you know, encouraging me to be more responsible. He had to rebuke me a few times as well. But and then there was Ted, who was my pastor over there, who I sat under his teaching, his Bible teaching at the church, and I learned a great deal from him. He had to rebuke me a few times because I didn't have parents around, right? I was kind of like this latchkey kid just running around from house to house. And Ted was there. He was this counselor for me. He was the one that was helping me stay on the straight and narrow. And all these men in my life, it's funny, their name Tom, Tim, Ted. It's like a kid's child book or something. And Dr. Seuss book, that's what I was going for. And these guys, man, God really placed in my life to speak life and to really lead me in the right way. And then there was my sister. And my sister became like a mother for me there for a couple of years, just invested in me, helped just really love me through that stage because I was a difficult kid there, had a rough stretch for a while, and I was just so grateful for her presence in my life, extending grace to me, being merciful to me, helping me understand what a godly woman is like. And to really go for that when it came to the choice of the woman that I would marry in my future. And of course, I took that to heart and married Deborah. So that turned out good. But, you know, this is an important value for us as families to embrace. And even though it may not seem to you critically important while your kids are young, I just want to encourage you, surround yourself with people. Build a community around your family where your kids are very used to hearing the voices of these people in their lives. I'm looking back here at Laura McGregor. Laura McGregor is an auntie to my kids. This wasn't in the message. This wasn't planned. I'm just seeing you right now. And I am an uncle to Lachlan, who's up here in the front row. And we even call each other that. Lachlan calls me Uncle Jay. And my girls and my kids call Laura Auntie Laura. The same with Corbett and Amanda. These are people that we have fostered a relationship with. And my kids, from the time we first met them, Gregors at 2 or 3, or even the time we first met the Stubberts, my kids have always, they've grown up just understanding these men and women are there to speak life. And we trust them and the things that they say. We allow them to discipline our kids, not corporal punishment, discipline our kids when they were over at their house, right? They could choose, you know. They were given the full freedom. Hey, we believe in you. We trust you. We entrust our kids to you. And now my daughter lives over at their house and their son lives over at my house. And there is this teamwork, right? Because Lachlan, well, maybe not so much, but Lachlan will listen to what I say to a certain extent, even more than Matt. And Josiah will listen to what Matt says even more than he will listen to me. And the same goes with Corbin, Amanda, and all these people that God has placed in our life. And from the time our kids were young, we established these kinds of relationships. And so what I want to say to you, if you have young kids and you're saying, well, my kids aren't really at the stage where my influence is waning, well, they will get there. Sooner rather than later. And you need to establish these relationships and help them understand how important it is to be able to trust other adults in their lives. That's what this concept is all about. We are to widen the circle. We are to pursue strategic relationships for our sons and for our daughters and broaden that scope of influence in their lives. I just want to review where we have gone because we have emphasized a number of different values. And first of all, we started with imagine the end. And I put this slide up there, if you would, Lauren, put it up there. I know it's kind of a small font. I wanted to fit it all in one slide. But imagine the end. We are to focus our priorities on what matters most. And what matters beyond anything else is our kids' relationship with God. We are to fight for the heart. We are to communicate in a style that gives the relationship the priority. We are to recognize that the relationship is the priority. Jason taught that second week. We are to make it personal. You know, when it comes to discipling our kids, we have to personalize this. We have to be the ones who are reading the Word. We have to be the ones who are pressing into our relationship with God so that will reflect onto the lives of our kids. Our personal growth equals their personal growth. We are to create a rhythm. We talked about this last week. These meal times, these drive times, these bed times, all these strategic times throughout the day where we can invest in our kids. Increase the quantity of quality time that you spend together. And that's an important way to say it, I think, especially in this day and age when we're so under a time crunch. Increase the quantity of quality time you spend together. And then lastly, this week, widen the circle. Pursue these strategic relationships for our kids. It is so, so important that we have these other voices in their lives. As we close today, I just want to draw your attention in your program. There's this card that Amanda Martinez made up for us. And I want to just throw this out to everyone. This tagline that we're throwing over this series for us as a church is invest your best in the next generation. And we really want to encourage you just to ask the question, okay, what would my role be? Maybe you find yourself as a single without kids. How could you do something? What would God call you to do to invest your best in the next generation? Maybe you could sign up to be a mentor for one of our junior high or elementary groups. Maybe it's just making a consistent effort to get down on a kid's level every Sunday and give them a high five and encourage them, right? Maybe it's as simple as that. Maybe it's prayer for them. If you find yourself as a grandma or grandpa, and maybe you don't have your grandkids around, maybe you can adopt a set of kids here in the church. That might be a good investment for you. Maybe you're a parent and you've got your own kids. Maybe they're raised. Maybe they're older, like my kids, and there's a lot of younger kids around, and maybe you can provide some support for those families with younger kids. I know Amanda Martinez is a new mom, and Amanda's daughter was over at our house spending the night last night, and man, we just love that. We love broadening our influence and being an encouragement to other kids and bringing them into our household. And even if you are a parent, even if you feel maxed out, I want to tell you, man, it is so good just to expand your influence and reach these other kids. And it's amazing, man. They listen to you more than your own kids will listen to you. So it's really good. So I want to just encourage you with this. You don't need to turn this in. You can turn it in. It would be a great encouragement to us just to see how you're navigating this message series. But in this line, I want to, and there's a line there, and you can fill it in if you need more space down there. But just talk about what your takeaway would be from this message series. What do you want to do? How would God call you to invest your best in the next generation? And then as well, there's some information. If you would like to get connected with our student ministries, with Jason, or in our children's ministry with Amanda Martinez, this is the contact information, and we would love you to get involved. As a church community, our strategy is to think orange. Really, as a church, to equip and encourage the family to do the work of discipling this next generation. And we want to see their faith take off. We want to see them love Jesus even more than we ever have. Take it further than we ever have taken it. And that really is our goal. And so would you pray with me as we pray into this and just believe that God will do something great in our church community?